Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Friday, January 17th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we finish up this week on the program. Two segments left to go. The first, I'm going to do kind of a grab bag segment, talk some Major League Baseball, talk some NBA, talk some NHL, talk some college basketball. Whole bunch of stuff here to get you ready for the weekend and beyond. And then the second half of today's show, Brett, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, will help us out with this week's version of the odds report. Sharp money out there in the NFL betting market for the NFC Championship game between the Packers and the 49ers. And, of course, the AFC Championship game between the Titans and the Chiefs. So we'll get his thoughts and his analysis on what's going on in the betting market with those two games, both sides and totals. Then also we'll take a look at the process for the Super Bowl. Once we know those teams, that line will come out. Obviously, there are some look-ahead lines already out there in the market as well. So we got some thoughts on that from Brent on this week's version of the odds report. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff being posted over there. We got a lot of good content heading on into the conference championship weekend. We've got Danny Vorgs' NFL power ratings and model projected final scores. My NFL market report going up on Friday morning. We'll have daily NHL from Parker Michaels. No article on Friday. He's unavailable. Got something going on, but he'll return again on Saturday. We'll have NBA and college basketball content as we go throughout the weekend as well. We got a UFC preview up for UFC 246. Keep an eye out for James Mazzola's golf previews. A good one this week for the American Express. Once we roll into Sunday, we'll have another tennis preview from Big Ten Watto. It's a lot of good stuff going on over at the website. Make sure you check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. All right, so like I said, I'm going to have a grab bag segment of sorts here. A lot of different things to talk about. We'll start with some Major League Baseball stuff. Roll into the NBA and college basketball, finish up in the NHL, and then we'll bring Brent on the show here to give you some thoughts for the odds report. All right, let's start with Major League Baseball here, and we'll take a look at this Astros scandal, the biggest story in Major League Baseball right now, and quite frankly, one of the biggest stories that we've seen in quite some time, maybe going back to something like the Mitchell Report, something like that, but this thing is far from over. Obviously, we've already seen some fallout with the Houston Astros. They fired general manager Jeff Luhnow, also manager A.J. Hinch. Boston follows suit, and they let go of Alex Cora. Maybe that was more of a mutual decision than anything, but still something that had to be done after, you know, he was really thrown under the bus with that investigation. So the Astros trying to protect their own. Maybe it was Cora's idea. Maybe it was all about him. But the Astros really seem to be protecting their own there. So Cora, he was involved and certainly – you know, deserve the outcome there, probably getting fired by the Red Sox. But the big one is, you know, the Mets and Carlos Beltran. And, you know, Beltran was part of the Astros, was part of this whole thing that was going on here. Whether or not he had a lot to do with it remains to be seen. However, again, the Astros, you know, kind of throwing some of the outsiders under the bus a little bit. And Beltran and the Mets deciding, you know what, it's probably better that we just go our separate ways. I would assume, and of course I'm recording this here on Thursday evening, so there may already be a new manager announcement by the time you hear this show, but I think Eduardo Perez does make a lot of sense. Former Major League hitting coach, obviously Major League player, you know, a bilingual player as well. I think it would be a very good hire from the Mets if they decide to go that route. But this thing isn't over. You know, and then on Thursday it comes out that, you know, maybe Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve were wearing some sort of devices once word got around that the trash can banging was the way that they were, you know, relaying signs. The whole thing is a mess. And initially, you know, it was basically, okay, we're not going to punish the on-field personnel. We're going to punish, you know, the people that collaborated almost behind the scenes, so to speak, like a Cora, letting go of Hinch, letting go of Luhnow, you know, Brandon Taubman, of course, you know, the ban for him. Now, though, you may be running into a situation where you may have to actually punish the players that are on the field here for this. And you know, this is really opening up such a Pandora's box, because you've got a lot of ways that players try to gain competitive edges, whether it's doctoring the baseball a little bit, whether it's, you know, the old school way of picking up signs with a runner on second, things of that sort. You know, ultimately here, the fact that they use technology to cheat is what is the biggest problem. You know, if you're having signs stolen at second base, change up, you know, your sign sequence. If you're having signs stolen because someone's using a camera or somebody's using some sort of technology to relay the signs, that's altogether different. So whatever happens from this, hopefully the game winds up better on the other side. You know, but this was a thing that was going on for quite some time. The players, you know, didn't want to snitch, didn't want to have anybody sniffing up their own backsides with, you know, what is your team doing? Or how do you know about this? Stuff like that. So we'll see what happens here. But I will say this. In retrospect, it makes Rob Manfred's decision to focus on pace of play and defensive shifts and all this other stuff that he, you know, had this crusade about, it makes it look even worse in retrospect, because the integrity of your game was being compromised. And there was a lot of talk. There's been a lot of smoke about this. And obviously now more things are coming out here that people knew about this in baseball circles. Either Major League Baseball opted to ignore it or pretend that it wasn't a problem or something like that. But, you know, given how long this has been going on, given that it's now happened with two franchises, with Cora going from the Astros to the Red Sox, I don't know how Major League Baseball didn't step in earlier than they did. Now you kind of wonder, you know, obviously this did significant harm to players with their earning potential. You know, imagine being a pitcher in the American League West and facing Houston for, you know, 9 or 10 games there at Minute Maid Park over the course of the season. You really do wonder how far reaching this is going to be. Now, from a betting standpoint, of course, Astros games are going to be very interesting now because, you know, they don't have Hinch, and I don't know how much of a tangible impact that actually makes, but you're going to have a lot of people out for retribution and revenge, and some pitchers are going to take it into their own hands in an old-school way, start throwing at Astros hitters, you know, start going up and in with fastballs, stuff like that. You know, I'm curious to see what happens with the fallout here on the field in terms of games with the Astros, Red Sox, and Mets, all without managers about a month before spring training. And you know, the Astros seem to be looking for kind of a bridge guy. They're sort of looking for somebody that, you know, has experience, can deal with all the questions that are going to be coming. So they look at guys like John Gibbons or Buck Showalter. You know, these really aren't big analytics guys. So I don't know if they'll kind of be puppets and someone behind the scenes will be pulling the strings, but somebody like a Buck Showalter, I mean, I don't think that's a good fit for the Astros and what they do in terms of metrics and analytics. So that would be something that would really sour my opinion of the Astros, maybe by 2 or 3 games or so over the course of the season. The Red Sox and Mets are likely in much better shape because, you know, those two organizations aren't necessarily in shambles over this. And in particular, the Mets, I don't think it's going to be a problem one way or another. They've still got guys that they can look at, like a Hensley Mullins, who was hired as the bench coach, Eduardo Perez, who was reported to be the runner-up to Carlos Beltran. So I think the Mets are in fine shape. The Red Sox, you know, with some of their cost-cutting measures, maybe that's a little bit more difficult of a job to take. But then the Astros' job is very, very challenging. You know, the Astros, you could almost liken it to something like an Ole Miss or a Baylor in college football, something like that. Obviously, sign-stealing nowhere near what was going on at those two programs. But just in the sense that you're kind of looking for sort of a bridge type of guy, someone that can really rectify the image and the foundation of your organization, which is why they would look at some guys from the old guard. And, you know, I don't know if that's the right decision from a, you know, from an on-field standpoint in terms of how the Astros will fare, but it is still very interesting to see how all of these dominoes will continue to fall. And like I said, maybe now we start talking about, you know, player suspensions and actual punishments to these teams on the field, because, you know, initially it was thought that the Astros punishment was pretty light. You know, they lose some draft picks. There could be a lot of potential value in lost draft picks. The $5 million fine was the most allowed by the MLB Constitution. So, you know, that was more of a symbolic gesture than anything else. But then Luhnow and Hinch, you know, Luhnow just gets replaced with some other very smart individual in that front office. So that's probably not that big of a deal. And Hinch, while I thought he was a very good manager in a lot of ways, very aggressive with his bullpen usage, you know, a lot of managers are by and large interchangeable. So maybe now if we get some sort of tangible impact to the lineup and to the roster, we could see a much different type of outlook here for the Astros. So that should be very, very interesting to say the least. Now, Caesars Sportsbook posted some win totals here this week. William Hill has already had theirs up. PointsBet in New Jersey has had their MLB season win totals up as well. Working on the guide, going through, I'm doing all of my team introductions right now, sort of looking back at, you know, some of the advanced standings metrics like base runs, like third order win percentage, stuff like that. Looking at some of these managerial changes, kind of a recap of last season for a lot of these teams. Then I go through once a lot of the transactions are done, once a lot of personnel is set in place. Then I go through and write up the offense, defense, the intangibles, positives and negatives, stuff like that. Going to use the same format that we used last year. So a lot of these win totals in the 2,000 to 2,500 word range. I went 21-9 on the win totals in the guide last season based on the lines that were out there when the guide was posted. That was posted, I believe, in late February, I want to say. So 21-9 last year, hoping for similar results here this year. But I do have a few win totals to throw out to you here that at first glance, without doing my significant deep dive into each of the 30 teams, just kind of look off a little bit to me. And I know I'm going to get people saying that I'm a homer and this and that. Everyone knows that's listened to the Bettors Box, read my article, really paid any attention to anything I've done at Bang the Book or my Twitter account at Skating Tripods. I am an Indians fan. But the Indians at 86 wins is just too low. You know, and this is sort of like what I talked about a lot throughout the week with regards to the NFL playoffs. Perception, the court of public opinion, you know, these things kind of shape the narratives for these teams. And the optics of this offseason have been very bad for the Indians. They completed a Corey Kluber trade, and the primary piece that they got back was a reliever. So that's something that a lot of people are going to look at and say, well, what's going on here? Was that a salary dump? Is that some sort of, you know, rebuilding type of position, something like that? No, it's not. It's not a rebuilding position at all. The biggest problem for the Indians is that they traded Corey Kluber a year late. You know, and that's not even factoring in the injury. It's just factoring in that his spin rates were going down. His velocity was going down. There were a lot of things that I was really worried about when it came to Corey Kluber. So I have no problem with that. I have no problem with the Indians making that move to trade him away. And I think, too, you know, when you get a guy like Emmanuel Clase, who I think is going to be a very, very good pitcher for the Indians here, you know, you get a bona fide back end of the rotation type of guy. And with Class A, it's one of those things where the Indians get a controlled player, a guy who won't reach free agency until 2026. It was a pretty good trade for them, especially when you consider the starting pitching depth that they have. And in particular, let's keep this in mind. With this season win total of 86 victories, the Indians won 93 games last year. Mike Clevinger missed 2 months with a bad back, still finished top 20 in Fangraphs' calculation of WAR. If you reduce the sample size to 120 innings, didn't qualify for the ERA title, but still, even with 120 innings, with F4, which is largely a counting stat, he was still a top 20 pitcher. Shane Bieber, top 20 pitcher. Aaron Civale got a long, extended look. Carlos Carrasco missed most of the season with leukemia treatment. He's expected to be back this year, and he's not that far removed from being a top 20 caliber pitcher. So the Indians' rotation is very, very strong. And I understand that their outfield looks a little bit questionable right now, but they still have two top 20 position players in terms of F4 in Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez. Lindor's sprained ankle early on in spring training last year was never really healthy throughout the season. Jose Ramirez, he had his injury issues, broken hamate bone. And again, the Indians still won 93 games. And I understand the Twins are making moves. They got Josh Donaldson, a very good pickup for them. A lot of people like what the White Sox have done here this offseason. But the Indians are not some ruined team. They're not some 500 ball club now. They're not an 85-win team, in my opinion. They're probably a 90 to 95-win team without any upgrades to the current roster. So 86 is just too low. Again, the court of public opinion, very, very low on the Indians. But when you've got two top 20 starting pitchers and two top 20 position players that you can build around, You've got 38 games against the Royals and the Tigers. 86 is just too low for the Indians here. That probably will be one of my season win total over bets, depending on what happens with this number as we get closer to the release of the guide. But again, a lot of things went wrong for the Indians last year, and they still won 93 games. Another one I'm looking at here is the under for the Seattle Mariners. Their season win total 67.5. And look, I don't like taking very low win totals, you know, because the margin for error is so small on those types of things. Last year was kind of an outlier for me, where one of my favorite ones was the Miami Marlins under 63.5. They came in quite a bit under that. But, you know, about midway through the season, Miami was on pace to fall very close to that season win total number. Now, in the second half, they played a lot poorer, so they wound up coming in well underneath that season win total. But a lot of times, I don't like taking low win totals. This may be an exception for me. You know, the Rangers did overachieve a little bit last season, but with Kluber, with Mike Minor and Lance Lynn back in the fold, I think they're better on the pitching side than they were last year. And Joey Gallo essentially missed two-thirds of the year last year with some different injuries. So, you know, you've got a situation here where the Rangers are a better team. The Angels are a better team. They add Anthony Rendon. They still have the best player in baseball in Mike Trout. And last year, of course, for the Angels, to the tragic death of Tyler Skaggs, injuries to guys like Andrew Heaney, you know, they just didn't have pitching depth to begin with. Then they lose one, you know, to Skaggs' death. They lose some to some injuries. And the Angels, they were in pretty decent shape heading on into late July from a win-loss standpoint, and just kind of cratered in the last 2 months of the season. So that is a team that was on pace to be pretty close and maybe go over its win total last year. This year, their season win total bumped up quite a bit to 85.5 with the Rendon signing, with Joe Maddon coming in. Now they think that there's a little bit more of a voice and a presence in the dugout there. The A's are still very good. Their season win total was finally adjusted up. I believe it's in the 87.5 range. And then the Astros, you know, despite what's going on here with this team, unless some players are suspended for the first part of the season based on, you know, being part of this sign-stealing master plan here, they're still a very good team. So the other four teams in the AL West, very clearly better than the Mariners in my estimation. And the Mariners last season, they started off 13-2 in their first 15 games. After that, in their last 147 games, 55-92. If you extrapolate that out to 162-game season, that's a 61-win pace. So they were 11 games over 500 in their first 15 games at 13-2, played to a 61-win pace after that. Under 67.5, probably one that's going to be on my short list here as well. Finally, one more is the Cincinnati Reds, over 83.5. I really like this team. I really, really do. The lineup is steadily improving. Shingo Akiyama at the top of the order should be a pretty good addition, should translate well to Major League Baseball. A lot of talented young depth on the bench, and this rotation is very much improved. Full season of Trevor Bauer, Sonny Gray, Luis Castillo. Love Wade Miley at Great American Ballpark. Good defensive infield, a ground ball guy, heavy cutter usage. I really like that. Some good arms out there in the pen. Guys like Robert Stevenson are getting better. Guys like Jose De Leon, a former top prospect that ran into some injuries. He's got some upside to go along with Amir Garrett, Raisel Iglesias, Michael Lorenzen. And also the Reds made a big investment this offseason on the player development side with analytics, going all in with the metrics. I really love to buy on those types of teams. Remember, last year, there was a lot of steam for the Cincinnati Reds season win total over, and they underachieved to a degree over the course of the season. Usually, as a general rule, if you've got a team that gets a lot of helium the season before and underperforms expectations, they usually get to that level the following year. Like the Reds over 83.5, and quite frankly, I bet this one's already been bet up out there at Caesars with these season win totals coming out on Wednesday. I bet this one's already been bet up a little bit, but I do like the Reds here. I think the Reds are very, very capable of winning the Central Division here this season. The Cardinals, not willing to spend. They've lost a little bit of their depth. The Brewers, a team that looks like they're going to kind of fall back a little bit. The Cubs were a massive disappointment last year. the Brewers, they're, or the Pirates, excuse me, they're kind of in a state of transition. This division is there for the taking for the Reds. Even though their season win total down in this 83.5, 84 range, I do think this division is there for the taking for them. And I do like this team quite a bit here for this season. So again, getting that Major League Baseball guide out to you probably about 3 or 4 weeks from now. Looking forward to getting that published. Probably make the rounds out in Las Vegas doing some cross-promotional stuff with our friends at Wager Talk and hopping on some different shows and podcasts. So a lot of baseball coming your way here in February and March. And I'll even probably look to do in the month of March those articles I did last year with some season-long betting tips, kind of looking at teams I'm going to want to look to back, teams I want to look to fade, over-under types of teams, things I'm going to look for on a game-by-game basis as opposed to a season-long basis. That's something I did last year to kind of shorten up the win totals a little bit. Probably will look to do that again here this year for the upcoming Major League Baseball season. Let's go through some NBA thoughts. I got some situational angles for us to take a look at here for this weekend, starting with on Saturday, the Cavs at the Bulls. The Cavs are ending a 6-game, 9-day road trip with a back-to-back. They play Memphis on Friday night, Chicago on Saturday night. And this is a trip that's had a couple of back-to-backs. They're playing a 4-6. They played out in Los Angeles for a couple of games. You got to dap it up with LeBron a little bit. Now they're playing the Bulls here in a back-to-back. It's a Saturday. They're going home after this game. I don't think we get much of an effort from the Cavaliers on Saturday night. Now, it is a back-to-back for the Bulls as well, but with the Cavs in a more difficult situation, playing that 4-6, that 6-9 off the West Coast trip, I don't think we get much of an effort from Cleveland at all here on Saturday night. So I do like the Bulls a little bit. Maybe the Bulls team total over, something like that. A pretty strong situational spot, I think, here on Saturday. Also on Saturday, the Suns at the Celtics. And I like this one quite a bit. This is the 11th game in 16 days for the Boston Celtics here on Saturday. And they've got the Lakers on deck. Los Angeles and LeBron in town on Monday. So the Celtics in a look-ahead spot with a lot of games in a very short number of days. The Suns finishing up a quick 3-game road trip. I like the Suns plus the points here. And I think you want to sprinkle a little bit on the money line in this situation as well. I think it's a very difficult spot for the Celtics, who maybe there's some load management considerations here as well with that game against the Lakers on deck. But 11 games in 16 days, a very heavy workload. Like the Suns on Saturday, a pretty decent look there. And then one more situational spot in the NBA for this weekend. And you can find my situational betting spots pieces every Sunday at bangthebook.com. I write one for the NBA, for college basketball, and for the NHL as well. The Magic take on the Warriors here on Saturday. And I kind of wonder if you've got to hold your nose and take the Warriors here in this spot. The Magic are off of the Los Angeles double. That's always a difficult spot because not only are you playing two really good teams, and the Magic, of course, playing former head coach Frank Vogel in that game against the Lakers, but you've got nights off in Los Angeles. You know, these guys aren't going to go back to the hotel and just crash for the night. They're going to go out there, enjoy the nightlife a little bit. It can be a very tiring trip. And furthermore here for Orlando, they've got to come cross country and play on the road in Charlotte on Monday in a division game. So I think Golden State in a pretty good spot here on Saturday. Again, it's very tough to back the Warriors in any context, but I think from a situational standpoint, the Warriors are a good look on Saturday, the Suns against the Celtics, and also the Bulls as they host the Cavaliers here on Saturday. Let's talk a couple of college basketball spots here I think are kind of interesting. Friday night, Dayton and St. Louis. This is a really interesting game to me because you've got Dayton off of a win against VCU. And for those that don't know, and I did preview this game over at bangthebook.com here, Dayton was about an 8-point favorite, and that one did cover the number. Those two teams don't like each other. And that's a rivalry that has a lot more juice on the Dayton side of the ledger. That is an all-in type of game for Dayton, an all-in type of game for their fans. This could be a tricky spot here going out to St. Louis on Friday to take on the Billikens. Kind of a difficult type of game, I think, for a Dayton team that has played so well, perception so high of this team, as we know. As we take a look here at a little bit of a look-ahead line, Dayton -7.5 or -8 here on the overnights as I'm recording on Thursday evening. I think that's a little bit too high. Now, maybe we do see Dayton take a little bit of money because they played so well this year. But I think situationally, this is a little bit of a tough spot for the Flyers. So I think the Billikens +8, if you could find an 8.5 or 9, depending on which way this line moves, I think that could be a pretty decent look here on Friday night with the limited college basketball card. A couple of spots on Saturday to key in on here. Cal State Bakersfield out in the WAC. I mentioned this one on Monday's show, also mentioned this in my article, that Cal State Bakersfield is in a tough spot here. They'll be laying a number on the road against Chicago State. Chicago State, one of the worst teams in college basketball year in and year out. But tonight, on Thursday night, Cal State Bakersfield plays UM Kansas City. And that was a game that had a line with UMKC in the -2, -2.5 range. So a low line, again, recording this before that game is played, if that ends up being a pretty close game there, and Bakersfield puts a lot into that one, I think Saturday becomes a very tough spot for them. Two games in 36 hours, a long way from home. Again, Chicago State is not good, but this is an early tip-off for the Roadrunners to have to contend with here. After playing what could be a close game against UMKC, Chicago State may be worth it on Saturday. Again, they'll be getting a lot of points. It's a very tough bet to make. But situationally here, depending on what happens with this Thursday night game, that will be played a few hours after I'm recording this segment, that could be one where you kind of look at the Chicago State side in that WAC matchup. One more here for Saturday, UTEP and UTSA. Again, another spot that I talked about on Monday's show with Kyle Hunter, and we'll have Kyle Hunter on after the weekend here for a full show on Monday once again. But UTEP wins in overtime at home against UTSA on Wednesday night. The Miners do not cover the -6 number. So now you wonder, what does this adjusted number look like at UTSA on Saturday? UTSA in El Paso on Wednesday night was up by 12 at halftime. They ran out of steam. UTEP tied the game, won it by 3 in overtime. Now what? Was that a situation for UTSA where maybe they got a little bit tired playing in the elevation of El Paso? I think that certainly could be a possibility. Do they exact revenge on their home floor? I think they do. Let's see what this line looks like. Again, that was UTEP -6 at home. You figure there's, you know, as Greg Peterson mentioned a couple of weeks ago on the show, 3 points of home court advantage or so. So you flip home court advantage here, UTSA a pick'em, -1, something like that. That seems like something you may want to jump in on because, again, in the first half, they were clearly the better team there on Wednesday. So UTSA, one that's definitely on my radar here for Saturday night. So again, to recap those situational spots in college hoops there a little bit. St. Louis on Friday night, getting some plus points against Dayton. Chicago State getting plus a big number against Bakersfield on Saturday afternoon. And then this UTSA game here against UTEP could be a good spot to take the Roadrunners. A little bit of a lot of Roadrunners here on this show, but could be a good spot to take UTSA there coming off of that tough loss to UTEP with revenge in a game where they did squander a pretty decent lead in that one. Finally, we take a look at the NHL here for this weekend, and we start with a couple of situational spots, and then I'll lay some heavier stuff on you here. The Penguins and the Red Wings, this one coming up on Friday night, and I think this might be a good spot to take the Red Wings, and that's very, very difficult because the Red Wings are just awful, the worst team in the NHL this season by a pretty large margin. But this is a tough spot for Pittsburgh. The Penguins playing Boston on Thursday night. Then they fly out to Detroit. Then they host Boston on Sunday in the NBC game. So a 12:30 puck drop there for that one. So this is a real challenging little spot here for Pittsburgh, I think. You're in a back-to-back with travel. It's a decent flight from Boston to Detroit. Weather will be a factor up in the Great Lakes area as well. So the Penguins may have some trouble getting out of town Friday night after the game on into Saturday. That will be a little bit of a consideration for them against a rested Red Wings team. Maybe if you don't like the Red Wings on the money line, and I can understand why, this could be a spot for one of those +1.5 puck line plays. You know, we talked on Tuesday with Brian Blessing about the Kings and Lightning game. Kings with their dads on hand, Tampa Bay in a bad spot. The Kings +1.5 was -110, and I didn't play it. Took a small shot on that Kings money line looking for the upset special. But don't shy away from the plus one and a halfs in really bad spots either, because it's tough to get margins some nights in the NFL or in the NHL, excuse me. So that may be a spot where you want to look at Detroit plus the one and a half there. If the price is right, you don't want to lay too much juice in a situation like that. But again, a very tough spot for the Penguins here. And those travel considerations getting out of town. Something important to point out here now that we're into the month of January, NHL, college basketball, NBA, whatever the daily winter sport is, travel headaches can be a problem. You know, these guys are just like us. They don't want to sit on the tarmac. They don't want to sit in the airport. They don't want to have to dick around with a 3-hour layover or something like that. They don't want to have to do that. So when weather pops up, keep an eye on what the beat writers have to say. There have been times for NBA teams where they haven't gotten to the arena until 6 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game, something like that. These guys are creatures of habit, man. They want to eat at the same time. They want to practice at the same time. They want their travel to go off without a hitch. If the Penguins have some travel troubles getting out of Detroit on Friday night, that's very much a possibility with the weather system rolling through. Maybe they have a little bit of a hangover with that Sunday afternoon game. Or maybe they don't give a shit about this game against Detroit. They just want to get done with it, get to the airport, and get out of town. Well, maybe that reflects itself in the way that they play here. So again, we don't think of weather impacting these indoor sports, but it definitely can, particularly with the travel. So you've got to follow along on Twitter. Look at the beat writers. Look at what the local people have to say about these things. Those things can be a pretty good factor for you to find some additional situational spots as the week goes along. My favorite situational spot in the NHL this week here is on Friday night, the Lightning and the Jets. Seventh game in 11 days for Tampa Bay, a back-to-back with travel coming off of playing Minnesota. You have to trust a spot like this. This is a very, very bad spot. One of the worst I've seen in the NHL so far this season. 7-11 with a back-to-back. Jets team that is a little bit more rested, obviously, than Tampa Bay. I think the Jets are a good look here on Friday night. Again, situational handicapping does make a lot of sense in the NHL, in the NBA, in college basketball. I found that maybe there's not nearly as much value in it in the NFL and college football here this season, but I do think it still stands to reason that it works a lot in those daily winter sports. So there are some spots that I'm looking at here for this weekend. And finally, in the NHL, let's talk about this real quickly. Bye weeks are coming up. So essentially what's going to happen here is that some teams will have the bye week before the All-Star break, which starts next Thursday. Other teams will have the bye week after the All-Star break, which ends on Sunday. So you're going to have some very well-rested teams here coming out of the All-Star break. And then obviously in the games a few days after the All-Star break, rust can be a factor with some of these teams. But here's what I wanted to point out. Anaheim and Tampa Bay, their final games before the All-Star break are on Friday. Teams done on Saturday that won't play again until at least the following Monday after the All-Star break. Arizona, Buffalo, Calgary, Detroit, Edmonton, Los Angeles, Montreal, New Jersey, Nashville, Ottawa, San Jose, St. Louis, Toronto, Vancouver, and Washington. So these are teams that won't play for at least a week, actually more than a week, after their final games here this weekend. The last thing that these teams want to do is sit on a loss for a week. Some of them do play head-to-head, but you've got to think with that bye week, a chance to travel with the family, a chance to just lay low, maybe go to the All-Star game, you should get some very big, very motivated efforts from these teams in their final games before the All-Star break. So again, that list of teams posted over in my situational betting article over at bangthebook.com. Again, I don't think these teams want to sit on a loss for over a week if they can help it. So those are teams on Saturday that may have a little bit of extra jump, may have a little bit more incentive to win their respective games. So keep that in mind here for this weekend in the NHL. Well, the four teams in action here for the conference championship games have all the incentive in the world because trips to the Super Bowl are on the line here this weekend. Packers, 49ers, Titans, and Chiefs. The betting market has been active. We do have sharp money out there on both of these games, both side and total. And fortunately, we're able to talk about that every week with Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook. So we talked about those two games here for this weekend. Also talked about the process, the starting process for the upcoming Super Bowl 54. Of course, we'll see after this weekend which teams will be involved in that game. But here is this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. All right, I'm joined by Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook for this week's version of the Odds Report. Brent, how's it going today, man?
Going wonderfully well. Beautiful summertime down here. I know there's a little bit of snow in parts of the rest of the world, apparently, but it's awesome time of year in terms of weather-wise. It gets like, this is just kind of like the start of summer, which is it's just really, really nice. And I will confess, I was at the beach yesterday and it was like 33 Celsius. It was just a brilliant day and all recharged to come in today and talk to you.
There you go. Sounds good. And only three football games left, only 3 weeks left to talk to me. I don't know what you're going to do without this segment on Thursdays. I hope you can find some way to replace it in your heart. But before we get to these conference championship games here in the NFL playoffs, let's sort of go over what I'll call a postmortem for Monday night, because I, like a lot of people, was on Clemson, and that line did end up dropping rather significantly on game day. How'd that game wind up playing out for you guys?
It wasn't bad. I mean, it's kind of... It's interesting from my point, because we're seeing the line dropping across the board, yet on in terms of the point spread, I still had LSU money. Like, we actually needed Clemson on the, you know, on the spread. But what is, you know, is typical, it'll be typical this weekend, I believe, as well. And it has been traditionally with the NFL playoffs, is usually you need the favorite on the money line. And that was the case as well. We needed LSU to win on the money line, because people were grabbing Clemson at the plus money. And in our store, they were laying LSU on the spread. So I was, you know, just slowly moving down as the number went. I was kind of like staying as high as the highest number on the board as it ticked down and ticked down, just because I still had more point spread money on LSU, despite the fact that I had the money line money the other way on Clemson. And I mean, yeah, we needed the under, but that obviously you could tell that was going to get washed out right quick.
Yeah, so I mean, it was a pretty interesting game, to say the least. And, you know, obviously there was a lot of prop betting stuff out there as well. Plenty of things for people to consider in that market. And you know, there will certainly be a lot of prop market stuff going out here for this game as well, coming up here with the Super Bowl, which people may have heard of, I guess I could say. So let's go ahead and talk about these conference championship games here. And again, as always, we go by rotation order on this show. So we'll start with the later game. Game 3-11, 3-12 is Green Bay and San Francisco. What's it look like over there at DSI for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, right now, the advantage kind of we all have, and that's, you know, our side of the counter as well as the other side of the counter with the customers, is in both these games, we're talking about teams who have played each other already. So you kind of have that to go from. You know, that's always kind of nice. So like, okay, these guys played each other and what happened that game. And you kind of can, you know, it's not to say like it's a blueprint that, okay, let's dissect what happened when these teams played before, and that's going to happen again, because, you know, it just doesn't happen that way. And especially when you're, you know, facing certain defenses for a second time, and even facing, you know, quarterbacks for a second time, you tend to get better and make adjustments. So I guess, I mean, that's the ideal. So teams, you know, the teams that lost should be improved in terms of looking at, okay, what do we do wrong and how do we improve on that? I do have sharp money on San Francisco, so that's kind of out of the bag right away. That money came in at -7. So San Francisco -7 was sharp. I'm at 7.5 right now. My wager count on the spread is almost dead even. I've got a count on the over of 4-1. So that's gone. Number's gone quite heavy towards the over. That started coming in mostly at 45.5, and we're at 46.5 right now. So mostly, you know, 45.5 is where I got hit on that. Nothing really at 45. I know that's the number I opened at. I think the lowest number was 44.5. So we opened 45. We're at 46.5, and most of my action came at 45.5. So no real risk on the total there. But like I said, the sharp money on San Francisco. But my count so far has been pretty much even. At 7, my count's about 2-1 favoring San Francisco. Since we've gone to 7.5, I've actually got more money, almost 2-1 going back the other way on Green Bay. So that's how that evens out to almost a balanced count. You know, looking at handicapping this game, I think, like, if you look at, you know, the numbers, you really, I mean, it's really tough to make a case for Green Bay. I think that kind of points to San Francisco. You know, the kind of narrative side of things is San Francisco. Yeah, they won that last game, and they did, you know, kind of dominant fashion. I think it was 37-8 that score. You know, information wise, there's nothing really influential in terms of injuries and stuff like that. So there's nothing, you know, really that jumps out other than the numbers and stuff like that. And obviously the numbers and stats, if you will, and the on-field analysis is what really going to drive this. I think at 7.5 is probably going to work for me. I don't see this number moving a whole lot the other way. I mean, it could tick back down if some sharps got involved in Green Bay. But like I said, my count at the 7 was 2-1 favoring San Francisco. My count at 7.5 is 2-1 favoring Green Bay. So it seems like, you know, that's kind of going to, you know, be the number that works for us.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense, especially what you're telling me here. You know, San Francisco, as we've talked about all week long here on this show, opened 6.5 against Minnesota. And this was a Green Bay team that beat Minnesota twice in the regular season, won the NFC North over Minnesota. And the opening line implies that Minnesota is a better team than Green Bay. So the move up from 7 to 7.5, not particularly surprising. I will say I thought the over move was a little bit surprising here. A lot of that money coming in on Thursday, in fact, the day that we're recording this segment, because it kind of almost goes against what we would expect with San Francisco, in the sense that you would think a higher scoring game with an Aaron Rodgers-led team would help Green Bay, and a lower scoring team with a Jimmy Garoppolo-led team would help San Francisco. But the line's gone up in both, which is kind of interesting to sort of read into, as we like to talk about all the time, the game flow.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, because I do think that, like, it, you know, we talked about, you know, last week about how San Francisco was probably going to put a lot of pressure on Cousins, just because their defensive front seven has speed. They're just such a fast team. They don't have to blitz very much to get pressure on the quarterback. They're so good that way. We talked about how healthy they are on defense now. And the thing too is Green Bay, the success they're probably going to have, you know, and the way you kind of beat San Francisco is having, you know, success running the ball. And I think Green Bay is set up to do that with Jones and Williams in there as well. So I think, you know, Green Bay, definitely you can make a case for them in terms of numbers and them being able to have success running the ball. And if that's the case, you kind of would lean towards the under as well. You know, this total, like I said, you know, it's gone up. Like I said, in-house was 45, and we're at 46.5. And again, you know, the last time these two teams played, it was 37-8. So you're talking about 45 points right now. It's like right there. And it's like, you know, how are we going to get more? Now, Rodgers didn't have a great game. I think he threw for like 100 some odd yards and stuff like that. And obviously he was under a whole lot of pressure. But I don't know. The total, I'm kind of, you know, I'm just not sure what's driving it up. And I'm going to, you know, like I said, I looked at my account and I've got a 4-1 wagered count towards the over. So my hunch is that it's just public money driving this. And guys, I talked about before, I mean, it's not only sharp money that drives the market. If you don't have any sharp money on this total, and the public elsewhere as well as here is betting 4-1 towards the over, I mean, you keep on moving that. You're still moving on your money, whether it's influential money or not. The spread, I can say, like, you know, I said, it's clearly sharp money on San Francisco -7. And getting to it, you know, getting money back on Green Bay now that we're 7.5.
Well, and just to clarify here, you mentioned you're 2-1 on Green Bay at +7.5. That would include teaser money on San Francisco to bring it down to 1.5, right?
Yeah, that's the thing too, is, you know, you're talking about these numbers where they are. It seems you opened up the teaser box there. That's really the, you know, the spot where, you know, as a book, you know, you've got to put up the right number, and the right number is the one that's going to attract the most action and also balance you as best as possible. Sitting at 7.5 on 7 on these two games, talking about 6.5-point teasers, it's like, there's going to be a lot of risk, obviously, for us in these games in terms of the teaser payouts.
All right, so let's go to that other game here. Game 313, 314, Tennessee and Kansas City. And I think this one, you know, again, I think the line move is very cut and dry in the NFC game. San Francisco is the sharper side at 7. Not surprised to see public money there at 7.5. And I think that move off of 7 was very telling. This game, I think the picture is a little bit cloudier here, as we're kind of split between 7.5 with dog juice and 7 out there in the market.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting at 7, and like, I, you know, I talked about earlier how, like, with the national championship game and these two games as well, you know, we're going to have a lot of dog money on the money line, and this, you know, the Green Bay game is that way as well. My count on the Green Bay money line is about 4-1 favoring them, and my count on the Tennessee money line is even higher than that. It's bordering on 5-1. It's about 4.5-1 if I actually did the math on it. So continued support on the money line for both the dogs. I'm getting a wager count though favoring favoring the favorite, but only about 1.5 times favoring Kansas City in this game. So the line did move down from 7.5 to 7 where we are right now. At even the in-house, I still had a wager count favoring Kansas City at 7.5. Even at 7, of course, it's still about 3-1 favoring Kansas City. So that's where I get my wager count, balancing these off about 1.5 times when I, you know, add it all up. So I'm still getting, you know, Kansas City money, yet the number's gone down to 7 and held there. I think a number like 7.5 minus 15 is probably what's going to work for me. Maybe 7.5 flat as we get closer to game time. And, you know, we talked about before, I don't try and get too much in terms of the actual handicapping of these games and stuff like that. I do look at the numbers and stats. I do go to the on-field analysis and look at things. You have to be on top of, you know, the narrative in this game is that Tennessee won last game. The narrative in the San Francisco game is the Niners won that game. Information, again, you know, injuries and stuff like that and situational stuff. And there's just nothing really that influences this one. The kind of situational spot here for Tennessee is you're talking about, you know, if my information is correct, this is like their fourth road game in a row, which, you know, you can't even find data on something like that because of, you know, how they play their regular season. It probably never happens, cases like that. But they went at Houston, at New England, at Baltimore, and here they are at Kansas City. So you're talking about a team, you know, obviously they won all three of those games as well, having beat Houston to start this off. So you're talking about a team here, Kansas City, looking to win their fourth straight road game. And you really, like I said, you can't really find data on that. But when you look at the numbers that they're putting up offensively, it's like, I mean, Tannehill against New England, I think he had 8 completions for about 70 yards. He's Baltimore, I think it was 7 completions for like almost 90 yards. And of course, Henry ran crazy on both of those games. But you know, you're still talking about a team who's passed for like around, we'll say 160 yards and thrown for, I don't know, like 300 something, you know, bordering on 400 yards in those two games. It's just like, Henry's always going to run the ball this well. Maybe is Tannehill always going to be, you know, have this low volume. I don't know. And this is a real tough spot, I think, for them. I do have sharp money on this game, not on the side, but on the total. We were at 51 and I got the over money there. So this number is sitting at 53 right now. I think there's some 52.5 out in the market, but I'm at 53, the higher number. I've got a wager count on the over. I'm saying 2-1, but it's actually a little bit higher than that.
Yeah, and you know, I think what's really interesting here about this game too is that, you know, as you said, you got to be leery of the Tennessee money line money because, again, I mean, they've pulled off back-to-back upsets here in the playoffs. Not just their fourth straight road game, but their fourth straight road game against a division winner, which at some point you've got to think that balloon kind of runs out of air a little bit. But, you know, maybe with the way they're playing, maybe that's not the way that things kind of set up here. You mentioned that, you know, you think that 7.5 is probably the number that you end up with here. Do you think that'll be because of public activity, or do you think that now that we're back to 7, or, you know, some places touching 7 for the first time, that will entice some sharp action to hit the board?
Yeah, it's kind of a wait and see. Like I said, we, you know, when we open 7.5 and go down to 7, you're really not at any risk in terms of getting middles and stuff like that. You open at, you know, 7, you touch on 7 and see what happens. I'm just kind of following the market right now. And again, these games are on Sunday. We're doing the show on Thursday. So, you know, just in case there was sharp money out there, I'm kind of going with the flow right now. There are a couple of places out there that are like 7.5 dog 20 and stuff like that. And I just didn't want to go there with the juice right like that on the 7.5 just to hold the number. So, you know, I'm going with the 7 right now. Like I said, I think I'm probably going to get, you know, have this one move up. And looking honestly, I'm kind of inclined to go that way. Like I said, I don't put my opinion into how I manage the markets here and my risk management philosophy. I don't say, well, how am I going to talk to the bosses after we get crushed and say, well, you know, I thought Tennessee was going to lose that game, and here's why I thought that. They don't care about that. They care what was the market and how do we do. But if you look at, you know, Tennessee and just everything they've done, you know, last week especially, you're talking about, you know, the game against Baltimore where Baltimore punted one time and they scored like 12 points, I guess it was. I mean, it's just like, they punted one time, which means they gained a ton of yards, which they did. I think it was like over 500 yards and stuff like that. So, I mean, Baltimore had success moving the ball. There were just key plays that, you know, that went against them. And obviously Henry did have a really good day. And, you know, honestly, I think Henry's probably going to have another really good day. But I think, you know, looking at the Chiefs and Mahomes and how healthy they are, how healthy everyone is. And the fact that we talked about this, that the back going back to the New England game, Tennessee still, they had the worst secondary going in the playoffs. They have trouble covering, and I think they're going to have a heck of a time against Mahomes. Now, the kind of thing we're going to look back on again is you have the advantage as a handicapper of looking at these games, how they were played before, because these two teams did play against each other already. And if you look at, you know, the way things went the first time around, it's a whole lot of Kansas City in terms of their favor. I mean, they outgained Tennessee by like over 200 yards, even though they lost that game. Henry had like his second best rushing day, I think, of the season. He put up like 100, almost 190 yards in that game. Yet still, Kansas City still outgained Tennessee by like over 200 yards. So, you know, Henry himself rushed for almost 190, yet they were still outgained by over 200 yards. Time of possession in that game as well was, it was like 38 to like 22 or something like that in terms of the minutes in that game, the time of possession. It's just like, it was just like really, really one-sided, yet Tennessee still got the win. So, I mean, how they've been winning these games, I all the credit in the world to them that they have been winning the games, but it just, you know, it seems like their time's going to come up. And, you know, if they win this one outright, that'll be fantastic for the book. I have no personal interest in Kansas City winning. So that would be, you know, I hope they win this game. I do have San Francisco to win the Super Bowl that I bet before the season started. So let's hope they get the job done. But, you know, I couldn't care either way in terms of who wins this game for the book. It'd probably be better if Tennessee won the game outright. But I just, you know, it's really tough to look at this in terms of numbers and on-field analysis and make a case for them, I think.
All right, so here's something I'm kind of curious about as we look ahead past Sunday, and obviously Sunday night, we'll know which two teams are going to be in Super Bowl 54. We'll reconvene again next Thursday night to talk more about the Super Bowl, but as far as putting up an opener, as far as the early process for a game like the Super Bowl where the handle is just going to be off the charts ridiculous, what does that sort of look like on Sunday on into Monday? How do you sort of start to manage your risk profile for that game?
Yeah, well, it's obviously the teams involved are going to be a huge factor in that. I mean, if you get, Kansas City and San Francisco, you're talking about two teams who have like very high brand name recognition, stuff like that. If you're going against throwing Tennessee in there, they're kind of, you know, well, honestly, if Tennessee gets there, they're going to be like public darlings that they have been probably for the past 3 weeks as well. So it should be all right. Again, the Super Bowl we've talked about before, it's kind of like the one game of the year where, you know, public money can kind of overcome the influential and sharp money in the market. There's just so much public money involved in the game. So you kind of have to keep that in mind in terms of your own customer base and your kind of risk profile for that game in terms of where do you think the public money is going to come. Obviously, I think in terms of like the numbers and, you know, the volume and the betting interest, I think San Francisco KC would probably be the best result for us in terms of just getting a ton of volume, but we'll have a ton of volume nonetheless.
All right, so we're going to do something special for our listeners here today because we only had the two NFL games to talk about. Obviously, we'll only have the Super Bowl to talk about here after this, but next week we'll talk about sharp action we get. The following week we'll talk about additional sharp action and also some of the props that have taken on some sharp action there in the lead-up to the game. But here this week we're going to talk a little bit of UFC. We don't generally do that here on this segment, but I know you're kind of an MMA guy. I know that you had some boxing in your past as well. So I just wanted to kind of get your take with this main event here and some of the maybe sharp activity on the rest of the card, but this Donald Cerrone, Conor McGregor fight, I mean, McGregor coming off a long layoff, Cerrone, a fan favorite, that guy will die out there in the octagon if he has to. He will fight until he can't fight anymore. So a fan favorite type of guy, the kind of underdog that you love to back because you know he's going to go to bat for your money, but also McGregor, one of the best ever in the sport.
Yeah, and the thing you have to look at with Cerrone is, I mean, he's all, talked about the fireworks and the kind of fights that he's always involved in, but that also obviously takes a big, big toll on you in terms of your, the ring years that you have, if you will. And so he's obviously, I think in a tough spot. The thing is, like, McGregor is, I'm not going to compare him to Mayweather in terms of like the love-hate relationship that people have with him, but you can kind of, if you wanted to draw a comparison, you probably could make that in that people want to see him lose. And there's no way, you know, that's the beauty of the sports betting industry, is that you have the right and the ability to express your opinion through your wagers. And I've got a wager count, you know, you see this number, I think it opened around, I think the lowest number they show was like around 250, and it's up to around 350 right now. So obviously there's been some influential money going in the direction of Conor McGregor, but my wager count on this one, and I've got a very solid wager count. I got a lot of volume on this fight, and it's very one-sided towards Cerrone. I've got a wager count about 3-1 that way. So that gives you an indication in terms of where the public's, you know, feeling about this fight. And again, I it's as much as liking Cerrone as it is disliking McGregor, I think. In terms of, you know, I don't have sharp money out there right now. I think in terms of the props and stuff like that is probably where you're going to find some value. McGregor by KO, TKO, DQ around there is around 210, I think it is. I think if you're going to play it, that's probably the way to go in terms of the fact that this number's already moved from the 250 up to 350 right now. And again, we're just talking about the ring wars and the damage that Cerrone's had. I mean, his best path to victory, I think, would be getting the fight to the floor, but it's, you know, Conor McGregor's takedown defense is getting, you know, better. I think, you know, eventually you're looking at McGregor just being able to overwhelm him. I mean, he is very accurate as a striker, so I just think the minus 210 is probably, you know, the way to go. It just seems like if you're going to find value, that might be the way to go it. But McGregor, he's got such good power. He's so accurate as a puncher, as a striker. So I think it's going to be, you know, I'm going to say a bloody mess. That's just kind of like my prediction for it. I'm not, I'm by no means a Conor McGregor fan. I am a Floyd Mayweather fan. I'll say that just because I just appreciate the art of his boxing ability. But McGregor, I mean, just, you know, as a person, just he's kind of like he's not the kind of guy you really look to and say, hey, I like this guy. A ton of heart out of Cerrone. Probably just going up a guy who's just too strong and too accurate for him, I think. So, you know, if I was going to lean anyway and say that, you know, might be value out there, I think the fact that, you know, I just don't see this one going the distance, and I do think McGregor's just going to be too much for him. So 210 seems to be like the way to go if I was going to play this.
Spoken like a sharp UFC handicapper. I mean, is this a market that you've had personal success in?
Yeah, I mean, I do look at the props and stuff like that, and kind of trying to find value. I think usually you find, you know, value in stuff like that. And again, you know, this is just case just for me with Cerrone. Like, he's been in so many wars. And again, I just think, you know, his chances are going to the floor. And I just don't see that happening. Maybe he'll get caught on the ground and, you know, there could be a submission or something like that in favor of McGregor. But I just think he's going to be too strong and accurate for him. Yeah, it's just my opinion. I do watch like almost every one of these events. I do. This card is just like, just stacked too. I mean, there's the great fights on this card. They did a really good job. If you go up and down the board from like the opening bout, you know, the odds are all between like minus 100 to maybe like minus 150, I think, is the highest one. And that's pretty much until you get, I think there's one that's around 330. The Pettis fight is, he's like a dog. The favorite there is like around 250, 255. And then the main event around 350. So, but other than that, you've got all these really close fights. The Grasso Gadella fight for the women should be a really good fight. Holly Holm and Pennington. I mean, the Gadella is at like a minus 15, minus 120 favorite right now. So that's a really close match, at least on paper. Holm is minus 135 right now. Really close. So, I mean, the men and the women, you got really, I mean, the matchups on this card are just fantastic. And they seem to be, you know, very well evenly matched.
Well, you do have Macy Barber as a massive favorite in the minus 950 range. There is some sharp action on the round prop for that one. And we do have three fights here that do have some sharp action that, you know, we might as well share here with our listeners for this Friday show.
Yeah, you touched on the Macy Barber Modafferi fight. I do have sharp money on that one. That came on the over 1.5 minus 110. So, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, you got like a minus 950 favorite. The sharp money's on the over. But yeah, I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, you see that in boxing a lot, too. People used to ask me, because I used to handicap boxing a lot, and they would say, you know, you've got this guy who's like, you know, a 500, 600, 700 favorite, yet, you know, the over is the favorite, like the total is like 11.5 over minus 210. Why is that? And while you're just talking about a guy who's maybe, you know, not the best striker, but a heck of a boxer. So in this case, I do have the Barber fight over 1.5 minus 110. One of the other fights I do have sharp money on is Justin Leddit. He got played at plus 130. That was against Alexa Kamur. And the other one was Maurice Green at Even Money. And that was Alex Olenek. That's the fight there. So I got Green at Even Money, Let It plus 130, and the Barber fight over 1.5. That sharp money has come in so far in this one, Adam.
Do you have any good stories from your boxing handicapping days? Any big scores?
Big scores? No. I do. I mean, it is funny because we're in Costa Rica and it's not quite a backstreet third world country, but it's a very well developed country. But my very first amateur fight I had down here, the very first punch that was thrown at me, I was just like, I pretty much froze and boom, crack, broke my nose right away. And the referee stops in and he says, yeah, you're bleeding now, by amateur rules, I'm supposed to, legally I'm supposed to stop the fight right now. And do you want to keep going? And I says, well, I said, like, to the guy, what happens if I keep going? He says, well, your nose is already broken. So, and I was like, oh, well, it's already broken. So we kept on fighting. So that was kind of funny that the first punch the guy threw. And then I go to my corner after the first round. The first thing that the guy who was training me says to me, he says, we didn't teach you any defense, did we? So that was just priceless.
That's definitely a tough spot to be in, to be sure. But what about boxing? Any big betting wins you can remember?
Oh, that I can remember. No, honestly, I haven't bet boxing seriously for, I'm going to say, over 5 years. I just kind of, I lost interest in the sport. I was really, really active betting wise when, like, Fernando Vargas, Tito Trinidad, Oscar De La Hoya, heavyweights, when Lewis was around, Haseem Rahman, those kind of guys. I really was, very passionate and had the time for boxing around then. But I did my own opinion and I bet my own opinion and I did, I'm going to say, I did quite well to that.
Good. We added Brent's career as a boxer to the odds report here this week on Bang the Book Radio. Brent, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate you taking some time out of your day here, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, and go Niners.
All right, there we go. Always great to chat with Brent over at DSI Sportsbook. And again, some very interesting stuff here, interesting activity for the conference championship games this weekend in the NFC and the AFC, and some good thoughts as well on what goes into the process there with risk management for the Super Bowl with, a full 2 weeks prior to that game. Coming up on our Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with professional handicapper Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Super Bowl 54 line and talk a lot of college basketball in that segment there on Monday. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.